Hello, and welcome to the TAA Audio Conference, How to Develop a Daily Writing Practice, presented by Carrie Ann Rockmore. Carrie Ann is Executive Director of the National Center for Faculty Development and Diversity. Her scholarship has focused on interracial families, biracial identity, and the politics of racial categorization. She is the author of Beyond Black and Raising Biracial Children, as well as over 24 articles and book chapters on multiracial youth. After she became a tenured professor, her focus shifted to improving conditions for pre-tenure faculty by creating supportive communities for writing productivity and work-life balance. Her award-winning work with underrepresented faculty led to the publication of The Black Academic's Guide to Winning Tenure Without Losing Your Soul. She provides workshops for new faculty at colleges across the U.S., writes a weekly advice column for Inside Higher Ed, and works with a select group of new faculty each semester in the NCFDD's Faculty Success Program. We'll be taking questions at the end. If you want to ask a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad, and you'll be put into the question queue. Carrie Ann will answer your questions during the Q&A at the end of the call. I now turn the session over to Carrie Ann.
Hi, Kim. It's good to hear your voice, and it's good to I can see you all on my computer screen, so it's great to see all of you here. Unfortunately, I have you all on mute because we're going to record this. Some people like to download it. But again, we'll take some questions at the end, but until then, I won't really be able to hear you. So just go ahead if you have questions, hit 1 on your phone keypad, and I'll go ahead and take those at the end. So I just, you know, usually I start off by talking about how miserable and awful my experiences were while I was on the tenure track. And, you know, they were miserable and awful, I think, for one and only one reason, and that's because I had plenty of mentors who gave me plenty of good advice, but the problem was that nobody would ever tell me how to actually do the things that they were advising me to do. So people would tell me, you know, you need to publish a lot, you need to get external funding, you need to balance your work and family life, all great advice. But the much more difficult part is really figuring out how. How do you actually do these things? And for me, I had to figure out the how the hard way. You know, trial and error, making mistakes, kind of clawing the secret knowledge out of people one at a time. And it just took me so long to figure it out that really a lot of the work that I do is really focused on helping people to not have it be so difficult to figure out how to do things, right? And especially the things that are going to lead to our long-term success. So I often call those things the 10 things I wish someone would have told me before I started my first tenure track job, because that's honestly how I feel about them. Sometimes I call them the 10 things that really help people thrive in the academy. But either way, I'm not going to talk about all 10 of them today. I'm going to talk about one. And to be perfectly honest, I'm going to talk about the one that I did actually learn before I started my first tenure track job. It's the one, to me, that quite frankly is the most important, and it's also the one that's the easiest to just go ahead and implement right away. And I have to say, it's also the one that I'm most thankful that I learned first, because my advisor, one of the best gifts he gave me is to teach me this one thing. And of course, that one thing is not just the advice that you should be productive and publish a lot, but the secret to how, right? And for me and for many other people, the how to be productive is through daily writing. So that's what we're going to focus on today. Again, this for me has not only really been the secret to how I finished my dissertation while I had a full-time job teaching a 5-5 load at a community college. But it's also been the secret that's helped me to write 3 books and a couple dozen articles and book chapters. But it hasn't just been something that's helpful for me. It's also been something that as I have worked with people, as I've taught it to people, as they've actually implemented it and stuck with it, that I've really seen almost more than anything else quickly transform people from being really stuck and not moving on their writing projects to a place of really explosive productivity. So let's focus on that one thing today. And for some of you, you know, let's be honest, this one thing will be more than enough. You'll go off, you'll implement, it'll be great. And for others, you may want to know, well, wow, this sounds really great. And what are the other nine things while you're at it? So I don't want you to worry about what those other things are. We're going to tell you at the end of the call if you're interested, where to get them, how to get them, et cetera, et cetera. But today, for this period of time that we're spending together, I really just want to focus on this one thing. Okay? So if you're following along on the slides, you know, you'll see a big, you know, picture, you know, slightly airbrushed picture of me smiling at you. I always put that in the packet for one reason, and that's because I have a tendency to be very blunt, to speak very, I don't sugarcoat things, and to be very real about issues. And I put the smiling picture in because I really just want you to know that it's coming from really a spirit of service. And, you know, even if I'm blunt, I hope I don't offend anyone, but if I do, please know that I'm saying it in a very real way, because that, for me, would have been the most effective way that I learned many of the things that I learned. So what are we going to do today? I've kind of broken this particular workshop up into three parts, right? So I want to first just talk about what the challenges are to people actually writing and getting writing done. Most of those will be very familiar to you. I want to just quickly make the case for daily writing, and I'm a social scientist, so I always want to know a little bit about, you know, why people are kind of suggesting things. I don't just believe anyone. I need some data and some evidence. So I just kind of want to share that with you. And then third, I just want to get into the how. Like, if you actually decide that you want to set up a daily writing practice in a literal way, how do you do it? Okay? And it's, you know, I don't think probably for anyone on this call, I'm going to be the first person that you've ever heard talk about daily writing. It's something we hear as good advice. But most people don't do it, and I think most people don't do it because they make a number of mistakes in actually implementing it. So I'm going to kind of talk you through what I think are the 12 steps to actually engaging in a daily writing practice. Okay? And, you know, I feel like you know, you're in the right place. I read a number of the questions that people submitted, so I just want to be clear on some things we won't cover. There were a bunch of questions about how do you construct a bibliography for a homeschooling textbook or something, which is great, but we're not going to work on that today. So if that's sort of what you came for, I just want to be clear up front. We're going to talk about why daily writing is important and how to set up that habit. But you're in the right place if you're just finding that you're really, really tired of the whole binge and bust, deadline-driven writing routine. I think you're in the right place if you absolutely know that what you're doing right now isn't working and you're willing to try almost anything in order to move you into greater productivity in terms of your writing. And, you know, I think you're in the right place if you really are incredibly busy and writing is something that feels like something you need large blocks of time that never seem to come. Because really what we're going to talk about today is how do you be productive in the midst of an incredibly busy life, right? So some of you wrote that you're not on the tenure track. You're actually in a research position or you have an administrative position. That's great because the kinds of things I'm going to talk about today are designed specifically for incredibly busy people, who want to get the writing done, okay? So let's go ahead and just start off and talk briefly about what I think are the two biggest challenges to being a productive writer. And you know, I direct a center. I travel to different campuses around the country every single week. We work with over 4,000 faculty at 300 different colleges and universities. And I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. I'm saying it because I hear the same things over and over and over again. I hear the same reasons that people can't write. I hear the same reasons that people say, I just can't find the time. I just can't make the space. I don't know how to stuff this into the rest of my life, right? So I think the two challenges, I'm calling them the structural challenge and the socialization challenge, because of all the reasons that I hear, they tend to fall into one of these two buckets, right? So the structural challenge is, what I mean by that is, if you're a faculty member, if you're an administrator, if you're someone who has a lot of work that is scheduled in your day-to-day work time, the problem for most of us is that the things that are the kind of least important to your long-term success have the greatest built-in accountability, while the things that, in fact, are the most important to your long-term success, and by that I mean your ability to get tenure, your ability to be promoted, your ability to get a job in a tight job market, your reputation as a scholar, your ability to be mobile, right, from one institution to another. It's that one thing that is most important to your long-term success that actually has the least and sometimes almost no built-in accountability. And let me be more specific what I mean by that. You know, I'll just use the faculty example because it's right at the front of my brain. But if you're a faculty member, teaching has a high degree of built-in accountability, right? You have to go to a room. You have to stand in front of people. You got to look at them. They're staring at you. They expect something to happen. And most of us are not going to step into that situation and not prepare. We're just gonna, right? You know that feeling in your gut when you have to teach that day. You feel a pressure to get ready, a pressure to perform. And the accountability simply means if you don't show up and you're not prepared, there's going to be a problem, right? There's going to be a negative outcome. So teaching has really high built-in accountability. And it's the same thing with service, right? You have to go to meetings. You have to go to events. There are, you know, a gazillion reports that have to be done by specific deadlines. All of these things, if you don't show up, if you don't do the work that needs to get done, there's going to be a problem, right? So, you know, service, teaching, administrative work, all these things have built-in accountability. But the one thing that has very little built-in accountability is your writing. And what's interesting is that there's some accountability, right? Maybe at the end of the year, certainly in a third-year review, certainly in a tenure review, certainly when you're on the job market. But that happens in very infrequent intervals. And so the problem for most people is that we're human beings, right? And we tend to orient our behavior and we orient how we spend our time each day to the things that we're going to be held accountable for, right? So we get that feeling in the pit of our stomach when we have to teach. We have that feeling something has to be done about our administrative work, about our service. But what do we do about our writing? We promise ourselves it's going to get done. If it doesn't get done, we promise ourselves it'll get done sometime in the future, right? We just keep pushing it off, because we can. It doesn't have the built-in accountability. So that's the structural challenge. And I think the socialization challenge is that most of us have an unhealthy pattern around our writing, right? So we only write when there's a deadline approaching. We wait to the last minute to get it in. We assume that we have to have these big chunks of time in order to actually get into a writing project. And some of us think we have to actually be inspired, or there has to be some feeling for us in order to write. So the problem, of course, with that is that leads to a binge and bust cycle. And for many people, it's just uncomfortable, right? You feel this constant sense of guilt that you're not writing. The deadline comes, and you have to go into this binge mode, which means dropping everything else in your life so you can get some writing done. And then when you meet the deadline, you know, you're done, but there's not really a feeling of satisfaction because you know it wasn't your best work. And then you got to pick up everything that you dropped in your life in order to get the thing done. So, you know, if that sounds familiar, it's okay. That's the way a lot of people do it. So there's no judgment there. It's just that I think these are the challenges, right? And a different way of saying that is, you know, we all kind of know that we live in a publish or perish world. We all know that publications are extremely important. We know, depending on your discipline, external funding may be equally important. We know that our value in terms of how other people perceive us and how marketable we are, how tenurable we are, how promotable we are, is really going to be determined by our ability to publish. But again, when it comes down to our day-to-day behavior, we tend to orient ourselves to accountability. My mentor always used to say, the most important things are silent. They're just sitting there waiting for you to notice. And the things that are least important tend to be screaming in your face, right? So it's just sort of a visual way to imagine it. So I think the other challenge to writing is that we have a lot of, you know, really limiting beliefs around writing. And if you're following along on the slides, you know, I've sort of put down what I think are the three biggest myths about writing. The first is that you need huge, uninterrupted blocks of time in order to get any serious work done, right? You couldn't possibly do anything in a short period of time, and what this leads to is people keep waiting and waiting for these big blocks of time, and, you know, you might get some of those when you're a graduate student, but if you become a faculty member, certainly if you become an administrator, the further up you go, the less likely it is that you're ever going to get large uninterrupted blocks of time. The good news is that what we know from the research is that the most productive writers work in small daily increments, okay? So I left that blank so you could write it in just to cement it in your brain. You don't need huge blocks of time. And I'm going to talk more about the data for this in a minute. But I just want you to get a sense that you don't need those big blocks of time. In fact, the most productive people don't write in big blocks of time. They write in small daily increments. I think the second biggest myth that I hear all the time from people is somehow they have to be inspired to write. Like they have to have some feeling or some energy around writing. And what I would like to suggest is that no, you don't. You know, you don't have to be sort of visited by the muse in order to sit down and write, but that what's most helpful is if we start to move writing out of this mystical bucket that people have it in, and instead just think of it as part of our job, right? So I don't really like going to meetings, but meetings are part of my job, so I go to meetings, right? I don't sit around waiting to be touched by the meeting muse, right? Or I have to be inspired to go to a meeting, or I have to feel like going to a meeting. I just have to go because it's part of my job. And, you know, I would say also about teaching. Before I teach, I usually don't feel like it, right? I might even be grumbling and complaining right up until class starts. And then once it starts, that's for me when the magic happens. I get, you know, flushed with energy. I feel excited. Once people start interacting, I can lose track of time, right? The idea here is that it would be great if we could start thinking about writing the same way. It's a practice. It's part of our job. We do it whether we're in the mood or not in the mood. It's just a daily practice that we build into our routine. And we know, just like meetings, just like class, sometimes it's going to be great. Sometimes it's going to be awful. And most of the times it's just going to be somewhere in between. Okay? And the third myth is this idea that writing is what I do when I'm done thinking. So a lot of people sort of explain to me that, you know, an idea has to be, I don't know, fully cooked in their brain or something before they deliver it wholesale onto the plate, right? And, you know, one of my favorite mentors always used to say, writing isn't what you do when you're done thinking. Writing is thinking, right? So part of the, I think, part of the reason that people are so productive when they do daily writing is because they're not trying to cook it all in their head. They're touching it every single day. And when they're touching it every day, when they're doing a little bit of writing every day, what happens is the thinking process occurs right along with and you know, is inherently embedded in the actual act of writing. So that to me is really ultimately what the challenges are. We have these structural challenges. We have these beliefs around writing that keep us from doing the one actual thing that would really put us in productivity, which is daily writing. But I also just want to talk maybe for 5 or so minutes about the case for daily writing. And what I mean by that is, what is the empirical case for daily writing? And I think I'll just go ahead and talk about two particular pieces. Both of them are by really my favorite faculty development researcher, Robert Boyce. I'm sure many of you are familiar with his work. But these two pieces for me really cement the case. They may for you, but I'll tell you, they were the reason for me that I was willing to start at least trying daily writing. So the first is one of his studies about new faculty and, you know, how new faculty spend their time. And what's interesting is that there's really specific patterns. He's found this repeatedly, really specific patterns about how faculty members spend their time. And, you know, if you have a chance to read his work more in depth, and I would encourage you to do so, what he finds in a nutshell is that most people fall into a very specific pattern, and he calls that pattern the typical new faculty member, typical because more than 90% of people fall into it. And he differentiates that, or he compares that to the very small group of people who behave in different ways. He calls them quick starters, but I don't think we call them quick starters. You know, in your department, they're probably known as like the rising star or the golden boy or the golden girl or the golden child of your department, or somebody who just, you know, hits the ground running, or sometimes in my discipline we always say they're so smart, as if somehow they have, you know, superior cognitive functioning to everyone else. So the idea here is that we notice these people because they do seem to hit the ground running, right? They behave in different ways than other people, and because of that, in a very short period of time, they establish themselves as a player, right? They're producing, they're getting the grants, they're doing their teaching, they seem to have everything in order. So I just want to kind of point out what the behavioral patterns are that differ between these groups of people. And again, there's no judgment here. It's just an observation that, in fact, part of what leads to the quick starter's success is that they spend their time in fundamentally different ways. And to be perfectly blunt, they spend their time in ways that are aligned with how they're actually going to be evaluated for tenure and promotion. So the typical new faculty member over-prepares for class, and by this I mean they are spending enormous amounts of time not just preparing for class, but elaborate grading assignments, and they're really doing this because they're just terrified of being in the classroom, right? So they tend to engage in what we call defensive teaching, right? So they over-prepare material, and they do so so that the students don't really have an opportunity to engage, right? Often this is done because they're scared to be asked a question that they can't answer, or they think they have to prove that they deserve to be there. But either way, they're spending enormous amounts of time preparing for class. And, you know, even though they know they need to publish in order to get tenure, if you ask them how much time they're actually spending on their writing and research, it's nowhere near what's going to be needed in order for them to meet that criteria. They tend not to have productive kind of conversations about work with their colleagues because, of course, when you're not writing, the last thing on earth you want to talk about is writing. And if you're struggling in class, the last thing you want to talk about is class, right? And then it shouldn't be any surprise that given how much time they're spending on their teaching, they're not writing, they're avoiding conversations with their colleagues because they're not writing, that they tend to feel this sense of loneliness and a lack of collegial acceptance at the end of the year. And I just really quickly want to compare that to these quick starters, right? The quick starters are very different. They're not over-preparing for class. In fact, they are spending, you know, appropriate and strategic amounts of time on their course prep. And by strategic, I mean They tend to prepare right before class, so there's a hard stop, right? They're not preparing for 10 hours before a 50-minute class. They're preparing for 2 hours, and the end of the time is when they have to go to class. They're consistently spending 3 hours or more working on their scholarly writing, and that doesn't really sound like a lot of time. And it's not, because it's 30 to 60 minutes per day, Monday through Friday, okay? They're having great results, but they're having great results because they're touching the work every day, Monday through Friday, in small increments. And because they're touching the work every day, you know how it is on days when you're writing, your head's really in the ideas, right? And so we shouldn't be surprised that when they're talking with colleagues, they're asking for advice, they're asking for suggestions about the kinds of problems that come up as we're doing the writing. And, of course, they're productive, so we shouldn't be surprised that they tend to feel higher levels of job satisfaction. So I'm saying all of this because I want to be really clear. People succeeding or not succeeding, people struggling or not struggling, rarely has to do with their cognitive ability. It's not that one group is smarter than the other. What's different about these people is how they spend their time, and really whether their time is being spent in ways that are aligned with how they're actually going to be evaluated, or whether they're just responding to the built-in accountability structures of teaching and service. So I never feel like the case is complete around daily writing until we actually look at the outcomes of people who write in different ways. And one thing I just love about Robert Boyce is that he's not just interested in how faculty can succeed or how people can be more productive, but he's really interested in this question of, is there a difference between people who do the binge and bust, only write on deadlines, versus people who write every day, versus people who write and add the magic ingredient of accountability? So I put a table there for you if you're following along on the slides. And it's really just one study where he took a group of people. They ended up really committing to different types of writing behaviors. The no change group is people who just keep on going on their binge and bust. They keep waiting for the big blocks of time. They're not really interested in daily writing because it just doesn't sound right. Okay. The second group is people who write every day and are willing to record their progress. And when I say write every day, I mean 30 to 60 minutes a day, Monday through Friday. And the third group of people are people who, you know, they're like me when I saw this table, when I saw this data for the first time. What I'm doing isn't working. So give me the full intervention, right? So they committed to writing every day, recording their progress, and being held accountable. And by accountable, it just means once a week meeting with somebody to say, my writing goals for last week were either I did them or I didn't do them. If I didn't do them, why? What kept me from doing them? And of course, what am I going to do this week? And so what's fascinating to me is that after a year, they sort of measure the average number of pages that people produce in these different categories. The group who just didn't want to change, wanted to keep writing in their binge and bust model, waiting for the big blocks of time, what's interesting is that after a year, they produced on average only 17 pages. The second group who wrote every day and recorded their progress, they wrote a lot more. They averaged, in fact, 64 pages being produced. That's great. 64 is a lot more than 17. But it's that third group that finally really got me to want to try daily writing. And the final group are the people who wrote every day, who recorded their progress, 30 to 60 minutes, and they held themselves accountable on a weekly basis. They added that magic ingredient of accountability. And they produced, on average, 157 pages over a year. And when I saw this data, all I could think was, I really literally said to myself, I am not stuck on stupid. I am so clear which of these groups that I want to be in. I am so clear. I don't even need to know how this works. All I know is that if what it's going to take for me to produce anywhere near 157 pages a year, if all it takes is for me to set aside 30 to 60 minutes a day, Monday through Friday, and to create an accountability structure, I can do that. I'm really clear I can do that. And when I saw this, again, I was teaching at a community college. I was writing my dissertation, but I was also teaching 5 courses a semester. I was on 7 committees at my college, and I was also, we had 10 hours a week that were mandated by our contract for office hours. So I had a really heavy load. But I still knew I could find 30 minutes a day because, let's just be blunt, I watch a lot of just bad reality television. And if I can make time for, you know, Real Housewives, guess what? There are 30 to 60 minutes available in a day for me to write. So let me talk just a little about accountability structures, and then I'll spend the last 15 minutes before our questions really kind of walking through how you develop a daily writing practice. So the accountability structures are important because, you know, I started off saying there's accountability built in for your teaching, and it's built in for your service. It's built in for administrative work. But it's not built in on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis for your writing. And so the trick here is to create your own accountability structures so that you feel as pressed about getting your writing done every day as you feel about getting ready for class, as you feel about being prepared for a meeting, or any other thing that you have to do. Okay? If you don't get it done, someone will notice and there will be a problem. Okay? So I think the key question is, what do you need to have that feeling in your gut that it has to get done, right? What is actually going to make you feel that way? And I think this is different for different people. So what I've done is I've just suggested a couple different support structures, a couple different accountability structures, and the needs that they meet. Okay? And I'll just talk about these for a second. Write on site is really simple. It's exactly as it sounds. We do this in Detroit twice a week. About 12 of us meet at a coffee shop. We meet for 2 hours. And we sit around one big table and we write. We don't talk about what we're doing. We don't read each other's work. I have no idea what these people are doing. All I know is that for 2 hours we go and write. Okay? I think the need that it meets is just to be in writing energy, right? So if you're someone like myself and you're generally extroverted and the worst part about writing is being in a room in silence alone, this might be something for you to try as an accountability structure. So for us, if you don't show up to write on site, someone will send you an email, okay? Someone will call you. Someone will text you. And of course, we're all friends, so, you know, if you don't show up, people will talk about you too. So it's kind of a double accountability structure. It's really easy to set up. It costs absolutely nothing. You just set a time. You invite a bunch of people, and you sit around a table and you write. Okay? There's many different online writing groups, and I think these are great for people who need and want daily accountability. My personal favorite is the Academic Ladder. They have a wonderful, wonderful online writing group. We also have an online writing forum as part of my center. The point, it doesn't really matter what you use. What matters is this is really great for people who online things feel like real accountability. If you're somebody that if you don't write, you're just not going to go to the site, and if you don't write for a while, you're just going to forget that you ever signed up for it, this is not going to be for you. But if you're somebody who you like to log in, you like to track your writing, you like to get immediate feedback and support from other people who are invested in the same commitment, the same type of daily writing project, you'll probably like that quite well. Accountability groups are really simple. We usually do them here. We have 4 people. It's 1 hour a week. These could be done face-to-face. They could be done by phone. They could be done by Google Chat. They could be done by all kinds of different things. But the structure is really simple. It's 4 people, 1 hour. Everybody gets 15 minutes. And in that 15 minutes, you just answer the basic accountability questions. My writing goal for last week was either I met it or I didn't meet it. most important question, if I didn't meet it, why? And how am I going to translate that insight into this week? So what are my goals for this week? And the reason I think this works is because, especially if they're face-to-face, even if they're over the phone, they push that same button that you would probably be embarrassed to show up week after week after week and tell people you haven't met your goals. I think the other reason it works is because you have to hear yourself say week after week, if you haven't met them, why? And I think this is a great way to start identifying your own patterns, especially in a context of a group of people who can support you and give you ideas about how to not keep repeating those patterns. Writing coaches are great. They are just like an accountability group, but just for one person. So each week you focus on what happened last week, what you're going to do this week, and what might be standing in the way of your writing. Boot camp is basically all of the above. We run a boot camp. My center runs a boot camp, 15 weeks. We do it every semester, every summer. But it's really a combination of online daily support, accountability groups by phone, a writing coach, and you have this really intense accountability structure. And people love it if they need to make a really intense immediate change, but if it feels oppressive, that isn't something that's for you. Okay? And the final one is my favorite, the professional nag, or it could be somebody that you work with as a buddy. It's just somebody who you connect with each day at the beginning of your writing time. The professional nag, she calls you up. You tell her what you're going to do, and then she calls you at the end of your writing time to see how you did, right? And, I think this is really great for people who, my biggest problem is when I sit down to write, I have a sudden burning urge to do anything but write, okay? In other words, it's really hard for me to get started. Once I get started, I'm just fine, but it's just kind of pushing me over that cliff. So, if you want to pay somebody to do this, it's not expensive. If you want to work with a buddy to do this, that's free. It's just, the point is, it's a daily phone call at the beginning of your time, and it's a connecting later to make sure that you actually did what you said you were going to do, okay? So let me finish by talking about how to develop a daily writing practice. And I'm calling it a 12-step program because I think it's really a 12-step program to help you break the pattern of binge and bust writing, to kind of break the cycle of all of these kind of limited beliefs about you need big blocks of time and you need to be visited by the muse or you need to have everything worked out or you need to read more. That's a great one. The idea is that it just is a way to step-by-step help you to actually do the daily writing, okay? And it's really simple. But if you try this and you actually implement it, if you implement it for 4 weeks, you are very likely to see an immediate and really quite significant increase in your productivity. So I would encourage you, if this sounds great, like something you might want to try, just take an experimental approach to it. Just try it exactly as I'm describing, do it for 4 weeks, and then just look at your productivity. Is it greater? Is it less? Is it the same? And take a look at how you feel about the writing. Is it greater? Do you feel better about it? Do you feel worse about it? Do you feel the same about it? Because really what we're trying to do is not just you're not a robot. We're not just trying to get you to be more productive, but we're also trying to adjust the feeling around writing, right, so that you actually get to feel a sense of satisfaction on a daily basis about making gradual, incremental, steady progress on your writing projects. So let's just get started on these. I have one slide where I outline what these steps are, but why don't we just sort of get into them one by one. So the first step is actually set aside a time to write every day. This sounds so obvious, I'm slightly embarrassed to say it out loud, but you just want to open your calendar, pull up your calendar, and literally block out of your calendar, just like you would a meeting or class, 30 to 60 minutes per day. And I want to really encourage you, if it's at all possible, to go ahead and do this first thing in the morning or as close to first thing in the morning as possible. Because I think we all kind of know that our days, you know, they start to go off the rails as the day progresses. And the morning is when you're least likely to be disturbed, you're least likely for things to change, you're least likely to have sort of some unexpected thing that throws everything off. And the other thing I just love about the morning is that once it's done, you kind of know the most important thing, and I mean the most important thing to your long-term success, is done for the day. So even if the rest of the day goes haywire, you did the thing, right? You did the most important thing. You did the thing that's going to give you the kind of flexibility that you're going to want long-term, okay? So, you know, I think what I hear people say all the time is, oh, I'm going to write at the end of the day when everybody else's needs are taken care of. And that is a very odd perspective for me because, first of all, most people who say they're going to write at the end of the day don't write at the end of the day. And even more importantly, why would you put the most important thing in your career at the end of the day? You want to put the most important thing, you want to give that your best energy, your first energy, instead of waiting until everybody else is fed and then you feed yourself, okay? So the second step, once you've, you know, you've got your calendar, you've blocked out 30 to 60 minutes, if 30 minutes feels too much, go ahead and block out 15 every day, right? You can get a huge amount done even in 15 minutes. The point is to start building the habit, okay? The second step is to really get clear about the tasks that you're going to do during your writing time and to put them somewhere where you're going to be accountable. So if you're working with a buddy, send them an email to a buddy. If you're working an online group, post them in the online group, right? If you are doing some kind of other accountability structure, whatever it is, you don't just want to show up to your writing time every day and then have to figure out what you're going to do, right? So what ends up happening is that there's two different kinds of energy. There's a figuring it out energy, and there's the actually doing it energy, right? So you want to not have to figure out what you need to do each day. You want to do that at the beginning of the week. I think it's also the case that you want to really break things down into the smallest possible tasks. And the other great thing about doing that is not only is it clear what you need to do, but it also tends to reduce people's anxiety. So if you have very specific things, instead of saying, it's my writing time and I'm going to work on this article, that I say, I'm going to draft the first paragraph of the introduction. You see how that's much more specific? When it's done, I get to feel good that it's done. It's not this big, nebulous, open-ended thing. So I've given you an example here, which probably isn't the greatest example because it's somebody who writes 2 hours a day, not 30 minutes a day. But I wanted you to just get a flavor of kind of not just setting aside the time, but setting aside the tasks in the time, because that's really step two. So the third step is to really start each day by reviewing what it is that you need to do, okay? And by this, I simply mean something as simple as the first thing I do in the morning is pull up my calendar for that day, and I take a look at what needs to be done. And I tend to front load the things that are the most important, right? But I really just want to remind myself, if these things get done, everything else would be icing on the cake, but this is what really matters for today. And I think, you know, not only does this help you to really center yourself at the beginning of the day, but I also just think it makes it easier when people come up and ask you to do stuff, to say no. I think it makes it easier to let go of small things and to really just keep your mind focused on getting the most important things done. Okay? Step four, my favorite step, get your butt in the chair. And again, sounds pretty obvious, right? If you're going to write every day, it's really important to get your butt in the chair. But what I find is that people set aside their writing time, and then when it comes, they start doing all kinds of different things. So I put butt in chair in there because it is you can't write if you're not sitting down at your keyboard or with a pen and paper in hand. You have to assume the physical posture, right? It's just like meditating. You can't meditate unless you sit, right? So you want to do your work. you want to show up and you want to, you know, let whatever the process internally is happen, but your job is to get your butt in the chair, okay? Someone had asked if it's important if you have a designated space for daily writing. You know, if you do, great. I think it's easier to create the habit when you have a designated space. But I wouldn't get caught up on that, right? Because what you really, the goal here is for you to have the flexibility so that you can drop down the well anywhere you are, anytime, and get that 30 to 60 minutes in. This morning I was flying from Boston to Detroit, and it's a 2-hour flight. And if I, you know, was someone who was like, I can only write when I'm at my desk and I have coffee and, you know, my red slippers on, I probably wouldn't have been able to use that time for writing. But instead, you know what? I have 2 hours. I brought the things with me that I can do on a plane. My butt was in a seat, so I just went ahead and did my writing. So if for you, you need to have the space at first, that's great. I just don't want you to get too attached to that, because really the as you grow, you're going to want to be able to just drop down the well anywhere you can get your butt in the seat for that particular time. So step 5 is set a timer. And you know what? This is one of the most effective things and the things that people are most resistant and reactive to all at once. You want to set a timer for a very specific reason. First of all, it just does something to your brain that you know, gets you moving for a specific amount of time. And it doesn't matter what timer you use. I love this online stopwatch for a very specific reason. I love it because it enables you to do it as a countdown, right? So I put 30 minutes on. I let it count down. I can always look at it and see how much I have left. It's just a really easy practice. But the nice thing is that it helps you to realize in some ways how much you can get done in a really short period of time. And, you know, if you're going to do more than one 30-minute block, I would also really encourage you to just go ahead and put the timer on for your breaks. So if you're going to do 30 minutes and take a 10-minute break, great, put the timer on for 10 minutes. Because when the alarm goes off, you know it's time to get back to work. You set it for another 30, okay? It's hard for me to explain exactly why this is so effective, but it happens to me all the time that people say, oh, I finally tried a timer. I can't believe how great it is. So go ahead and give that a shot if you like. So step 6 is to expect resistance. Resistance, you know, is what comes up every time you start to do the thing that you actually really want to do. Okay? Resistance is an incredibly big topic. It's a topic that I do a whole 2-hour workshop on. But what I just want to get clear about today is that it is normal to experience resistance. It's normal when you sit down to write to have a burning urge to check your email, to think you can't write until you read a blog about what's going on in Libya, or feel like you have to go read some more of the literature because you don't really know it yet well enough. Or my own personal resistance is that I should go on Facebook and put as my status report that it's my writing time now, right? I mean, we sort of do a lot of ridiculous things. You know, it could be the feeling that you just have to eat something, you have to go to the bathroom, you have to get the right music on Pandora. Like, whatever it is for you, that's what it is, right? But the point is, it's normal to feel that way. What we want to do is just know what it is. Oh, here comes my resistance. And to start to develop some tips and tricks around maneuvering around that, okay? So step 7, stop when the timer goes off. The danger is that if you haven't written in a long time and you get back into a project, once you get writing, you're going to be so excited that you're writing, you're just going to, the tendency is to like blow your wad the first day, okay? You don't want to just, oh my God, I'm writing and I'm so excited that I'm writing and I can't believe I'm writing and this feels so good, I'm writing. And then you don't want to stop, right? But the point is, we're trying to break the binge and bust cycle. We're trying to develop a healthy, sustainable writing routine. So when the timer goes off, just stop, okay? If you want to make yourself a note about the brilliance that you're in the middle of, just make yourself a note. Some people write half a sentence knowing that their brain can start the next day by finishing that sentence. Some people just talk about what they're doing with someone else later in the day, right? But you just want to, if you're building the habit, set the time. When it goes off, stop. Again, the goal here is to develop the sustainable writing routine. Step 8 is very simple. You want to track your writing every day. And there's a lot of different ways to do this. You can do a spreadsheet. You can do it in a discussion forum. You can do it in an online community. It does not matter how you do it. It just matters that you know whether you're meeting your time every day. And if you're not meeting it, you want to start getting some clarity about what is derailing you, what you're letting stand in the way, what interruptions you're allowing, so that you can begin to take that insight every week and start to change your behavior in the next week. Step 9 is to give yourself a treat, and I think this is incredibly important because we're building a habit. We want to reinforce that habit by giving ourselves some pleasure every time we engage in the habit. And you know, I think it's important to give yourself a treat also because you want to really just thank yourself for going ahead and making the time to invest in the most important thing that you need to do that day. Pretty soon, most people find that once they're giving themselves treats on a regular basis, that after about a month or so, that they realize that writing itself is pleasurable. They lean into the pleasure of writing, and that writing becomes a self-reinforcing, self-treating sort of activity. It becomes the treat, if you will. Even though I'm saying giving a treat, lots of people think that if they don't write, they should get a punishment. That is not how it works. This is treats only, positive reinforcement. Okay. Step 10 is very simple. At the end of the week, you want to hold yourself accountable. And you want, well, all that means is you want to go back through your goals, wherever you put them, wherever you posted them, whoever you sent them to, and really mark off the things that you did. And the reason this is important is because many of us do a huge amount of work, and we don't even realize how much we do until we actually see it. So go back at the end of the week, pause on Friday, and take a look at what you actually accomplished. I think the other thing this does for us is it really enables us to, you know, the biggest mistake that people make is they underestimate how long things take. Right? How long writing tasks take, how long research tasks take. And I think, you know, as we're setting aside the time each week, each day, we're having to say what our tasks are. And if we find that week after week we're only finishing one task or two tasks, what that means is that the error is in our estimating the time. And that's great because we can fix that. We can start to realize that things take longer than we expect. We can give ourselves more time to do things, but it also forces us to adjust our expectations around what's possible. Possible for a week, possible for a semester, possible for a year. Okay? Step 11 is related to step 10. It's just about taking 5 minutes to reflect. How do I feel about my progress? What are the good things that happened this week? And the most important question is, how do I take what I learned about my writing and about my process this week, and maybe about my time management this week, how do I take that insight and how do I use it to adjust what I'm going to do next week? Maybe I need to start setting aside more time or less time. Maybe I need to adjust my expectations about what can get done. Maybe I need to shift to something different entirely. It doesn't matter what it is, but you want to just take that pause to really say, what worked here? What good happened? And what adjustments can I make? So the final step is my personal favorite. Take the weekend off, right? If you're going to be writing every day, if you're going to be writing Monday through Friday, the great, wonderful, juicy part about that is your work is going to be getting done in a steady, incremental way, so you no longer need to do it on the weekends. You can use your weekends to do all those things that you feel you really want to do, to spend time with your family, to be really fully present for other people instead of walking around with guilt on your shoulders that you're not getting things done. And this is hard at first, but what usually happens for people is their productivity goes up so significantly from doing the daily writing that it starts to become easier and feel safer and feel better to take the weekend off. The other reason I suggest it is because your brain actually needs time to kind of marinate on the ideas. So if you've ever been someone who's had, you felt stuck when you were in front of the computer, but then you went running and you figured it out, or you were in the shower and you figured it out, that's how our brains work, right? Certain times are for focused activity, and other times, we're in leisure, but guess what? Our brain is still working on the problem. So I'm going to stop here just to talk a little bit about, I hope this was helpful to you. I'll stay after to answer a couple questions. But what I really, want to invite you to is that if this was helpful for you, if it made you excited about trying daily writing, that's great. That was the purpose. But if it also made you curious about what the remainder of the 10 things I wish someone would have told me before I started my first tenure track job are, then let me just tell you sort of how you can access that. Our center offers an annual membership, right? It's very simple. Our annual membership, it includes a monthly teleworkshop just like the one you've had today. It includes a weekly Monday motivator, which is simply an email that has a implementable productivity tip for the week. It includes an opportunity to have an accountability buddy to be matched up with somebody else who's a member every month. We have a discussion forum and monthly writing challenges. I think what's really critical here, and I gave you on your last slide this overview of kind of what we do in those monthly workshops, what we focus on is the how. Right? So lots of people are giving you good advice. You should publish. You should get grants. You should do this. You should do that. And what we do is we really focus on the how do you do that. Okay? So if you take a look at the topics, this is what we do. Right? How do you actually plan a semester so that you can get the research and writing done that you need to get done? And we actually do that plan online. How do you align your time with your priorities? How do you develop that daily writing practice? That's what we did today. How do you master time management, right? How do you move around that resistance that comes up when you're writing? How do you actually create a broad network of mentors and sponsors? How do you say no, especially when you don't know how to say no or you feel like you can't say no? How do you overcome sort of this debilitating sense of perfectionism that tends to be ubiquitous among academic writers? How do you engage in healthy conflict, especially with people who have more power than you? And of course, how do you deal with stress, rejection, and negative feedback, which is really abundant in the academy? So you're more than welcome to join us for an annual membership. I think I'm going to hand it over to Kim because TAA is really making, I think, a great possibility for members to actually have a membership with the center as well. So Kim, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, thank you, Carrie Ann. If for those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Kim Pollack, and I'm TAA's Associate Executive Director. So TAA is embarking on a pilot program to offer 25 TAA members an annual membership, and Carrie Ann's National Center for Faculty Development and Diversity's Diversity Program. So at a special rate starting January 1st, 2012. TA members will be given the opportunity to join NCFDD, a $240 value for $50. So it's a great savings off of their annual membership, and we are hoping that members will take advantage of it. So if you want to reserve your spot in the program, you can email text and academic authors at taaonline.net by November 20th. And I'll include this information in an email I'll be sending to all participants after today's audio conference.
Great. So can we take a couple questions?
All right, let's do that. So if you have a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad. You'll be put into a question queue, and then Carrie Ann will answer your questions by selecting you and letting you know that you're open to ask your question. All right, go ahead, Carrie Ann.
Okay, it looks like, is it Fesla?
Yes, Fesla.
Hi, Fesla. How are you? I'm
fine.
Well.
I'm here at Florida State University College of Medicine. I think I might have been one that submitted for the pilot program.
Oh, great.
So that would be good. But anyway, my question is, I am currently a new doctoral student in higher education.
Congratulations.
And I've been out of school for a while, so of course it's a scary feeling with all you have to do with writing, scholarly writing and research and IRBs and lit reviews and all this stuff is about scaring me.
Yes.
So I have like faculty dollars to spend to go away somewhere and do some professional development.
Great.
So my question is there a place, a program that you could recommend that will deal with the following professional writing, scholarly writing? Because I have developed a successful program that twice we have submitted to academic medicine and it has been turned down.
Mm.
So the writing in that area needs to improve in addition to when I'm in class, you know, when you have to read journals constantly and write abstracts and summaries.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of writing is kind of difficult for me. I don't know if it's because I'm from the Virgin Islands. I didn't have all this growing up. But I think I'm a quick learner, and I write pretty decent for myself.
Yeah.
So that and all that I'm trying to improve on so I could just be a little bit more motivated about the doctoral program, because right now I'm wavering if this is what I really want to do.
Yeah.
Even though I know it would benefit me to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple different models for these types of things, right? If you literally want to go away for like a week and
yeah.
do an intensive writing retreat, I think the
right.
best one is Sisters of the Academy has a 5-day writing boot camp that takes place every summer.
Oh, it does?
And if you... Yeah, and if you email me, I'll send you the information.
Okay.
Oh, I've just heard wonderful things about it.
In fact, that's what I wanted to do, but I wasn't sure if they still do it. So they do.
I think they do.
So there should be one coming up next summer?
I think so. And, you know, I think it's good if it's, you know, you want to just sort of be locked away, have a transformative experience that's
yes,
going to launch you into something new, which I think is great. Another thing is, because of your area, you may also want to look into the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has a program called New Connections, and they offer a it's sort of like a professional development, it's almost like a conference that brings together all people in public health and biomedical research, and it usually happens once or twice a year. I've been to it several times, and I just think the quality of it is extraordinary in terms of the types of professional development that they offer around especially writing and grants. And the third, of course, I just have to throw in because, you know, I'm talking.
I'm waiting for yours.
Yeah. You know, we offer a 15-week boot camp, but it's got a different agenda, which is it's really to help you develop a daily writing where you are, right? So you don't go anywhere. It's how can I get these healthy habits sustained in my regular day-to-day life.
Which I need
okay?
as well.
So it's a different kind of model. And, you know, I certainly know people who participate in all three, but I think it's always about what do I need and what do I need first and how do I get it.
Okay. Do you know costs for any of them? And date.
I have no idea about the
and the Sisters of the Academy. You're going to send me the link.
Yeah, I know about mine is for the 15 weeks. It's $29.50.
And it includes all those things that you put on the monthly teleworkshops? Oh no, that's the free stuff.
It is. It's a different program. It's really it revolves around, and we call it boot camp because it's a once a week. Community call on Sunday nights. It's a small accountability group in the middle of the week, and it's daily accountability in an online writing group.
Okay, and you could send me that via email with the cost
sure.
and everything?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and send me an email, and I'll send you the links to all three.
Okay, what's your email?
Email
is this Kim?
No problem. It's Carrie Ann, KerryAnn, at FacultyDiversity.org. And, of course, anybody who's on the call can email me as well.
So for your boot camp, can it start anytime? Or is there...
It starts at the beginning of each semester.
Okay, so for next semester it starts when?
January 15th.
Okay.
Great. Well, Bessel, you were the only one with a question, so
is anybody
ask
else on
you
the call?
Shall receive. Yes, there's a bunch of other people, but you're the only hand up. Oh, there goes another hand. Okay, we're getting brave now. Thank you for breaking the silence barrier.
All right.
Yvonne, hold on. Let me unmute you. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, and I just finished my dissertation, my doctoral.
Oh, congratulations.
But I need to begin to do some writing on my dissertation. And I am not affiliated with an institution, but I work for an educational consulting group.
Great.
And I see that you're at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and I'm in Springfield. Is there a writing group at the University of Illinois at Springfield that you might refer me to?
Well, not that I know of off the top of my head. You mean like a write-on-site group, a group where you meet
yes.
up and write?
I think that would be good for me.
Yeah, I love it. I don't know of one off the top of my head, but I can't emphasize to you strongly enough how easy these are to set up. You could really, literally, all you have to do is declare a location and a time and just invite a bunch of people and see who shows up.
Okay, that would be interesting to see who shows up. I do have some mentors who would probably help me out here, but mm-hmm. I don't think they need the same kind of hand-holding that I do. I mean, these are people who are published, who've published books and things like that, who have helped me with my dissertation. But, you know, I feel like I need to get with folks that are about at my level.
Okay. Which is no problem. You can ask. You could ask them for names of people who are at the same place as you. You could invite people who are in your graduate program. You could ask people who you know, who they know, that's serious about getting some writing done. I mean, it might take a couple emails to get a cluster of names, but you really only need a handful of people on a regular basis. And I should tell you also, you would be surprised the range of people that show up for Write on Site. In our Write on Site, we have everything from somebody who is working on a dissertation to a dean and everything in between. So it's this idea that there's a space where people can go and write, and you really don't outgrow the need for that. Like the person who's a dean comes because they get to get off campus, their campus, there's no phone at the coffee shop, and they can just sit down and write.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a good idea. I'm going to try it. Thank you.
Great.
It works very valuable. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. So let's take one more question. Oh, I hope I pronounce it right. Is it Ece? E-C-E?
It's AJ. That's
all AJ. Right. Okay. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much for all the tips and ideas that you presented. They were really helpful. Well,
okay.
I am on sabbatical, and I am on a long sabbatical, whole academic year. I got, you know, salary cut and everything, so I can finally write and finish the book I've been wanting to write.
Right.
I'm in a teaching intensive institution, so I teach like 9 classes a year,
mm-hmm.
and I have a small kid. I'm a single mother, so I mean, I have just, you know, everything to do in the world. And well, right now I feel so wonderful, you know, not dealing with a lot of administrative things or teaching, and I discover all these, you know, at home, all these cupboards to clean up and
yes.
things to sort out, and
mm-hmm.
And I figured, okay, I'll give myself some time to do all that, and then afterwards, you know, I'll kind of get to it. I'll do a nice schedule. But, I mean, I'm writing, you know, some, and then I don't write for 1 or 2 days. So it's been very sporadic, and it's been, you know, very unproductive so far.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, I have only until next, you know, August,
right.
end of August, beginning of September, to get most of the work I need to get done, and I'm back to you know, terrible schedule. So it's like, I don't know, have you read or heard about you know, any schedules, for instance, like what would work? 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, set schedules, and then if I need to go longer, then I do that. It's like, what can I do? Or maybe it's something weekly, certain hours that I have to, you know, kind of punch in and like a worker. And it's like, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah.
What's the best?
Let me say this. It's interesting because, you know, when we're so busy with teaching and service and blah, 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 all we can think about is if only we had the time to write. And then when we're on leave, we have so much time that it actually becomes a problem.
Exactly.
All of a sudden we go from high structure and intensity to no structure and intensity, and it's a really abrupt shift for most people. So what I want to suggest is that you layer in several different types of accountability, okay? Because what you, you know, what it just sounds like there's no particular structure to the day. So I just want to suggest that you ask yourself, what is a schedule that seems reasonable to me? And I should tell you now that most people can't really focus intensely on intellectual work more than 4 hours a day. So if you want to do 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, that's great. If you want to go for 4 hours in the morning and then do other things the rest of the day, that's fine. But you're going to have to build somebody in terms of accountability, so that if you don't do what you say you're going to do, you're going to have to answer to someone. And I'm not saying like answer to someone, they're going to punish you. I'm saying so that you have to talk to someone doing it. Okay? And usually the best buddy for somebody on leave is somebody else on leave. Right? So
yeah.
If you want to email me, I can we can talk a little bit more about what those accountability structures would look like, but I think the key missing piece here is having some accountability, because, you know, most of us will, you know, we'd rather die than break promises to other people, but it's those promises that we make to ourselves that will kind of slide day to day, right? We'll kind of keep pushing it back. And what you don't want to happen is for your leave to go by and you don't get done what you need to get done. So I would say if it were me, I'd A, set the, get clear about what needs to be done. B, I would get really clear about what a schedule that's workable is in terms of your life, and really figure out what accountability structure is going to keep you moving forward in a consistent manner and help you to feel supported. I hope that's helpful.
Yes, yes. No, it makes so much sense. I have to do that, you know, there's no other way, it seems.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, like, nobody is asking anything from me.
That's
there's
right.
There are no editors. There's nobody. Yep, no deadlines.
Yep.
So, yep. Yep, thank you.
Great. Well, that's the last question, so I'm going to sign off. And otherwise, I just hope you have a really a sense that it's possible to start a daily writing habit and that you feel clear about what that looks like. So thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Carrie-Ann, for sharing your expertise with us, and thank you all for participating in today's audio conference. You will receive a follow-up email that includes a short survey about your experience today. Please take a moment to complete the survey. Your responses will help us improve future offerings. We'll also be emailing you about the pilot program with NCFDD if you're interested in that. So how to Develop a Daily Writing Practice is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association. Thank you all.